This month, we begin the topic of transcendence. There's a Zen saying that when you become enlightened, you'll be able to see the stone Buddha dance. Anyone care to guess what that might mean? It sounds sort of like a poetic metaphor of something else, doesn't it? Oh, I would like to propose that it's not metaphorical, that it's literal. I don't know about the enlightenment part, but I'm suggesting that as you continue your practice, as your practice matures, there will come a time when you will be able to see the stone Buddha dance. Now, I'm not talking about visions or hallucinations or 10 tons of stone coming to life like in some old Sinbad movie. What I'm talking about is clarity and equanimity with your perception. So the way we normally perceive it's congealed, it's conceptual, and it's solid. And if you have enough clarity around the tiny details of what's happening in whatever it is you're looking at, and you have enough equanimity with time and with what is changing, then you get so that you can see the actual underlying movement, the energy of what is bringing everything into existence. You can transcend the mundane way that we normally perceive the world, and we can see it as the flow of energy that manifests into what appears to us to be solid, and something that has a name and has meaning. So when we perceive, our eyes are moving all the time. I meant to look this up, but I forgot. Do we have any biologists or nurses here, or someone who knows how often your eyes are constantly moving back and forth as you look at things, and your awareness is moving within each of those movements, and your brain pulls all of those together and creates this sense that I am looking at a tree or I am looking at a stone statue. But at that point, that movement has already congealed into a solid thing that has a concept, stone statue. But you can learn to see those little movements, to perceive those movements, to perceive the moving of awareness within those movements, and things that you right now think are solid, you know, you're sitting on a solid couch, you start to see them as waves. The movements blend together and you get the wave, the constant motion, the constant change of perception. And so indeed, because perception is continually moving, you can see the movement of the perception. The stone Buddha actually begins to dance. You see the movement of the Buddha, of the statue, or of the tree, or of the car. And you see this because you see all of reality is moving. So no, the stone statue does not get up and start doing the tango, but you do learn to see the perpetual motion of things that we consider to be solid or fixed. So can we normal people with families and jobs and social lives, is it possible for us to learn to be able to do this? Or do we have to go live in a cave for 30 years and be a monk in Tibet? Well, yes, it is possible. It's absolutely possible. And I'm expecting that some of you will be seeing this flow of reality before too long. So it doesn't take 20 years in a cave, but it takes an exceptional amount of clarity and equanimity. So you need this very fine, high resolution clarity to be able to detect the subtlest movements that are happening in what you're observing, and to discern between the various elements of what are changing. And you need a great amount of equanimity, first of all, with the passage of time. It's not something you learn overnight. It may not take 20 years in a cave, but it's not going to happen overnight. So you have to have equanimity with your own grasping, your own frustration, your own wanting to be able to see this. But you also have to have great equanimity with the changes that you're observing. You have to be able to allow them to come and go and just sit and watch them. So you need time, you need patience, you need clarity. But all of this will lead to being able to see and experience flow. And when I say flow, I mean that motion, that underlying energy, that awareness of constant change. Flow is used in other contexts differently. So I'm not talking about just getting into that deep concentration where everything's working really well. That's a different use of the term, and that's cool, and it's sort of related. But I'm talking about seeing the changes that are going on. And of course, what I'm talking about is impermanence, right? We all have that a concept. We all know that impermanence happens, that everything changes. Everything is changing right now. We've all experienced it on a level of sort of gross conscious awareness. Some of us have experienced it in the loss of something or someone that we love. And we experience it in very trivial ways. You might have come in here feeling hot from having rushed up the stairs, and now you notice that you're a little cooler. That's impermanence. That's change. Maybe you had an itch a few minutes ago, and you're thinking, you don't remember scratching it, but you must have because the itch is gone. Itch was there, now it's gone. That's impermanence. Well, that seems really trivial, right? But that is also where the dance is. This flow is not something magical and different. It's right there in the itch. It's right there in the pain. So what we do is we sit in meditation and we notice the itch. And instead of getting distracted and coming back later and finding that it's gone, we sit and we watch it. And we notice that maybe it gets more and more intense, and you get more and more wanting to scratch it, and then it sort of spreads out and gets bigger and dissipates, and then it's gone. So you're applying a consistent, continuous concentration to this itch, and you're beginning to see the things that have happened to connect the itch being there and the itch being gone. So that's your first step in learning to discern more and to detect more. So say you're sitting and your knee starts to hurt. Initially, you watch it and it's first a twinge, and then it becomes a jabbing, and then it's a throbbing, and then it starts shooting pains down your legs. So that's right there, detail that you might not have noticed before in the past when you just realized suddenly that your whole leg was aching. So what do? You bring equanimity to it. You say, okay, I'm going to not fight this and watch it and see what happens. So then you start seeing more detail. What is happening in between that twinge becoming a stabbing? You can see a few more steps along the way. And then between the stabbing and the throbbing, you discover that they're two separate things that you can distinguish, and you can see them both changing separately. So then you bring more equanimity to it. You say, okay, I'm going to keep on letting this be here. Now, we're not talking about white-knuckling it through and just waiting for the bell to ring. We're talking about a conscious intention of allowing it to be there and not fighting with it so that we can watch it. And so we bring more equanimity, and you can see even more detail. And so then you bring more equanimity. And because you're bringing more equanimity, you're able to continue to watch. And because you're continuing to watch, you're deepening your clarity, and you're seeing more and more detail. And even at this point, it's uncomfortable, for sure. But just that part of the part about bringing the equanimity and being able to experience more pain than you could before, already that's worthwhile, because you're learning how to experience pain, and you're suffering less because of it. Because now, maybe an hour later or a week later, you can observe that pain further along and be able to sit with it. So right there, you've got a way of working with pain, but that's not the end of it. You want to keep on watching, and you keep observing smaller and smaller and smaller details until you get to such high resolution that you're seeing the tiniest little motions, the tiniest little changes sort of blending into each other. You're looking with such detail that you start seeing the wave of the pain rather than discrete things, discrete parts of the pain. You're seeing the pain as just this motion. It can be bubbly, like champagne bubbles, or tingly, or you start to feel undulatory, you know, like you're a lava lamp sort of blobbing around, or you feel an expansion of space, or an effortless contraction. You're feeling the underlying energy of that pain. And it's no longer an experience. It's just emotion. And the thing is, when you start to see that much detail, it becomes pleasant. It's like a massage from the inside out. So you're still feeling the sensations, but you're no longer experiencing it as pain. It's no longer congealing into a concept and into a solid thing, because you're watching the constant motion, right? And it's pleasant. Now, if that last step seems a little bit far-fetched or beyond what we think we might be capable of, think about getting acupuncture. Anyone here gets acupuncture? Few people. So what happens when you go to get an acupuncture treatment? You get a tiny little needle stuck into your body at some particular point with the intention of releasing the qi to flow, right? The qi is the Chinese medicine word for the life force. Are any of you actually acupuncturists or very knowledgeable? Okay, so I won't ask you for those details. But qi is the life force in Chinese medicine. It moves along meridians. You get these needles poked into you at certain places in order to get the qi moving. Now, the poke itself is pretty small. It's sort of like a mosquito bite or something, right? When you get that poke, you've got a lot of equanimity with it, right? You don't mind it, because for one thing it's small, and for another thing you believe it's going to help you, right? So you're not fighting with the acupuncturist to stop poking you. You let yourself be poked. Now, have any of you who've gotten acupuncture ever noticed at some point there's a little sensation around the needle, like maybe a little tingling or warmth or something, and your therapist will say that's the chi that you're feeling, right? Okay, most of you are nodding. So you get this puncture, you've got equanimity with the pain, you focus your attention on that specific location where that needle is, and you start to feel the chi. What I've just described is you have a pain in your knee, you bring equanimity to it, you focus on it very specifically, and you start to see the flow. Exactly the same thing. And this is why experienced meditators will sit for long periods of time in pain. It's not a thing about training yourself to take the pain. It's the acupuncture of the pain. It's knowing that if I work with this pain, if I observe it in more and more detail, with more and more equanimity, I'm going to start seeing the flow of impermanence that I have learned over my life to solidify into a thing that I call pain and that I don't like. And eventually, your pain dissolves into flow and it becomes pleasant. And you think you can sit there all day with this same sensation. So when we do this in a meditation setting, we are, for one thing, able to control the pain, right? And I have to say, if your pain is something that's damaging your body, then you've got to move. It's never appropriate to let your body get hurt. But the sort of pains that we tend to get sitting in your knees or your back or whatever, when you get up, they go away after a few minutes. Then that's okay. That's good pain to work with. Or itches or hot flashes or any sort of discomfort you can work with. And if it just gets to be too much, you can get up and stop. Choose something that you can bring equanimity to from the start and build up to larger pains. And that way you're training yourself so that when something happens in real life, you fall off your bicycle or you stub your toe and you don't have control over it and you can't stop it, you already know how to observe it with equanimity and with clarity and to see the flow in it, to experience the flow of it. And this experience of the flow, this seeing of the energy is what we call insight into impermanence. It's good to have the knowledge and the conceptual understanding, but the insight is really sort of magical. It may be that what I'm saying here sounds metaphorical, but it isn't. It's happened to me to be in pain in a long meditation and to be able to observe it just dissolve into sort of vibration.
Question. I have this understanding or idea that I need to get to that point where it's, as you just described in the middle, it's too much before I get to the point that you described before that.
Wait, you have to get to which point first?
That it's too much before I've gotten to the point it dissolves.
I'm not clear if you're saying that that's a requirement to see the flow, or if you're saying that you can't get to as far as flow because it always gets too bad to start with, I mean, before you get there.
I think the first
option. So you've had a sense that the unbearableness is necessary in order to see the flow.
That I'm certainly going to have that thought, it's too much, on the way to it dissolving.
that is not a thought that you need to have. And this is where we get to what you're working with. Start with an itch. You can see flow in an itch. It's the day-to-day, mundane, trivial experiences of change that we can notice. And I'll be talking you through some. The sound of a car getting louder and then softer, that sort of change. You can see the flow in that.
So that's actually the working to the threshold more than just directly taking the pain all the way.
Yes. And some, I actually was of a personality when I started meditating that I just gritted my teeth and tried to work with it, and I usually ended up just in pain and frustration. That's not necessary, but if you want to do it that way, you can. But I suggest starting with something small that you can bring a lot of equanimity to. And the more you strengthen that skill of equanimity, then you start building up the intensity. But don't get it into your head that it has to hurt. Suffering can lead to the end of suffering, but you don't have to create the suffering yourself. It's going to come in your life. So when you're doing it intentionally, practice on things you can handle. Because you'll have plenty of things that are overwhelming that you don't have to create yourself. There is the advantage that unpleasant sensation is a little easier to focus on. My teacher Shinzen likes to say you can reach enlightenment through pleasure, but you'll get there faster through pain. But you don't want to get, don't abuse yourself. Yes, sir.
So I guess all pain is kind of psychological. It doesn't necessarily have to, if you're talking about where it originates, but how would you apply what you spoke about to emotional pain?
Works the same with emotional pain. I want to make a distinction, though, between pain and suffering. Pain is objective, and we respond to pain like we do because we've evolved to protect ourselves. And that's one reason why I say you got to know that you're not hurting yourself. The pain is there for a reason, and if you're hurting yourself, stop. If you're objectively hurting yourself. The suffering comes as a result of not seeing clearly what the pain is. And when we don't see it in that clarity, then it gets stuck into a thing that we can dislike. And it's the disliking of it and the fighting against it that causes the suffering. So we've spoken before and we'll speak again about ways of exploring the suffering that is coming with the pain, your reactions to the pain, both conscious and unconscious reactions, and learning how to separate those out so that you only have the pain to deal with. But the pain itself is needn't be a cause of suffering. And that also goes for emotional pain. It may be a little harder to see, and there might be a lot more complexities in your response to emotional pain. But if you're able to get to the objective, subjective experience, if you will, someone that you love is angry at you, and that hurts. If you're able to distinguish between the activity of them shouting at you and your response to it is causing the suffering, their shouting at you is something that you can experience without it having to cause the suffering. So next week I'm actually going to talk more about the theory and history of this thing I'm calling flow, this impermanence, insight into impermanence. It can be hard to get a conceptual understanding of it, and it's hard to grasp really the significance of it. So I'll talk about that more next week, but what I want to do tonight is just teach you some exercises that you can use that will start to sensitize you to change and impermanence, and may lead to experiences of more of this energetic flow. And I'll say, for clarity of terminology, when I talk about flow, I'm talking about it's a quality of an experience. It's not a separate experience. So it's not that there's pain and then there's flow. It's that there's pain that either you're seeing as a congealed thing, or pain that is you're seeing as flowing. So it's a quality of what you're observing.